questions on this point. Nirmana Maharaj, the Sangha Dosha, Brahmachari Gurukule Vasadanto Guruhitam. Here that we're living in the temple, and Guru Hitan means for Hitan means for the welfare, that one lives for the benefit of their guru. Here guru is more generally in the sense of the institution, Gurukula. For brahmacharis, and for, this is a good rule of thumb as to where one goes. Generally speaking, brahmachari, grihastha, full-time devotee, is that person for whom the institution comes first. Because there's these two entities, the institution and the individuals. The institution is made up of individuals. But there are questions, which one do I put first in my priorities in life? So a full-time devotee, a brahmachari, or anyone, who put the institution first? And when someone can put the institution first, then I've already talked about that. It's not a crime. But it has to be real. And it can't be, you can't mix the two together. So for instance, you can't have someone who has no nationalistic spirit, who has no patriotism in an army. You can't have someone in the British army who's sympathetic to Russians. He's called a spy in technical terms. So in the same way, you can't have mixed loyalties. That has to be very clear. And that's a very interesting, and it's a lengthy concept, because naturally some people will argue the other side. No, the individual is more important. The individual is important because the society is made up of the individuals. But then, and it's the business of the society to take care of the individuals, but from the individual's perspective, for those who are full-time devotees, they have to live a life of tapasya, brahmacharya, live a life of austerity. So austerity means you sacrifice for a higher good. And in this case, the higher good is represented by the society. John Kennedy had this famous statement. He made many statements that are not famous. And one of them was, don't ask what your country can do for you, but what you can do for your country. So this sort of encapsulates this same concept that here the country is the institution, in other words, is ISKCON, is that devotees, individuals, they're able to function in such a way, and for brahmacharis it's easy. In grihastha life it's a little more difficult. You really have to be geared up for that and naturally have that type of mentality and understand, be enthusiastic for it. It can't be forced. Especially if it's forced. But one's able to actually do that and think, yes. The success of this Krishna consciousness movement is the most important thing to me in my life. And everything is important, but obviously people have priorities in life. That's how we think. There's always something, you know, what's your favorite Mahamantra tune? What's your favorite dish, prasadam? What's your favorite deity? You know, which is your favorite outfit? We always think in terms of hierarchies. We always think in terms of like and more like and most like. So we prioritize, and that's what goal means. Goal means you prioritize. So more or less this priority can be encapsulated like that, is that for a full-time devotee, his priorities is the success of Srila Prabhupada's mission. And for someone who, those who are not full-time devotees, it may also be theirs. It's not that someone who's not a full-time devotee, he may still be, but for other reasons he may not be engaged. For instance, you may have someone who's a patron of the society, and he may be someone who's donating a large amount of money. You don't want him to give that up and just move in and wash pots or something, or go out and, you know, if he's donating £100,000 a month, you don't want him going out and doing £3,000 a month on the sankirtan. You already want him staying out there. And for instance, I have experience of that in Hungary. We have quite a few initiated devotees, and their reason for doing business is solely making money for spreading Krishna consciousness. And for them, the institution comes first. So they are living like that. And living outside. But everyone who's living, who's not a full-time devotee, won't be thinking like that. But everyone who lives in the temple and who is a full-time temple devotee has to have that the institution and the mission is the top priority, and everything else is sort of secondary to that. Which doesn't mean that it's not important. It just means that it's secondary. Secondary doesn't mean it's not important. It's still important. But, and then devotees who are, and then those are the people who can be accommodated in the long term. They have their other requirements, spiritual requirements, etc. But more or less in terms of interaction with the institution, that encapsulates it. But the society is the priority, and the individual is the servant of the society, and they become secondary. And for brahmacharis, that's how they must be. Now sometimes people use this word, well, someone's being exploited. That the institution is a priority doesn't mean exploitation. But there's abuse everywhere, and abuse can take place everywhere, so that's a possibility. But obviously one should be careful about using the term abuse, and it's not. It's a way of life, it's a psychology, it's a certain thing. We're not the only ones who do it. I mean, everyone does it. You're reading a letter in the newspaper all the time where people think that, you know, they're willing to give their life up for a cause. And, you know, that cause may not even be a very valuable cause, but they're doing it. So why? Because that's their priority. So this is, it's not something revolutionary. I'm saying it's not just something unique to Krishna consciousness movement. This is going on, that there are people for whom a cause or a mission is the priority in their life. And they base their life around that. Whereas for other people, the mission is part of their life, but it's a part. It's not the sum, total, and essence around which everything else is turned. Anyone? Further on this topic. So, very interesting point. But at least in my mind, it defines really clearly the boundaries of where the temple starts and where it stops. The temple can't be this some kind of homogeneous glob that just goes out everywhere. It has to be a very, it should be a very well-defined thing. Any other questions? How long is our production?
Chop a few things off here and there. devotee takes birth in the heavenly planets due to his material desires after giving up his body. And is it possible for him to elevate from the higher planets to the spiritual planets, or does he have to take birth again in the earthly planets? And then how does it work? Because I heard that there's no concept of God in heavenly planets.
There's no concept of God. Well, there's no concept of God. They're all devotees. I mean, in principle, the certainly concept of God is, there's so many, that there are deities and incarnations of God, they're just sitting there in Indra's court and so on. But they're materialistic devotees, or at least they have a very, very strong sense of enjoyment, many of them. So this is, I mean, we're in hell. And if here you can't give up the spirit of enjoyment, it's really questionable whether there, where you get really good facility, you're going to be able to give it up. So even though it's possible, and there is Krishna consciousness there, and there's all kinds of facilities, but it's more difficult. The allurements are very, very strong. Even though personalities are very pious, so they may have to come back down here. Say that again.
This is the only planet Earth, is the only planet in the entire universe where you accrue karma. And this is the, if you go up, you can enjoy your karma, and then you can come back down. And if you go down, you submit your karma, and you come back. But this is the place for now to determine where you go.
We'd have to research whether that planet refers to this planet or this planetary system, like in the fifth canto. But I've also heard something similar. But even though if you're burning off karma, you still have free will, and you still have the opportunity to be Krishna conscious, because being Krishna consciousness won't be dependent on your karma. But it's questionable how well you'll be able to achieve that. So sometimes it's said like that you have to come back here to be Krishna conscious. This is where you really got to balance. There's enough suffering, and there's some enjoyment, and there's also facility for practicing Krishna consciousness. Whereas in lower planetary systems, then there's no facility. And up there, there's lots of facility, but there's too many distractions. So when drugs are legal, where, you know, members of the opposite sex are freely available, and so on, and, you know, there's very little misery and suffering, a lot of us are here because we've been suffering. There's very, very little of that going on. It happens occasionally when the demons come around, but otherwise it's not. Anything about our previous topic or question?
I was listening to one of your podcasts, and you were talking about your experiences in Sankirtan. You mentioned that it was so cold that you got severe frostbite in your hands and you no longer have full feel in your fingers. I wonder if you could maybe speak a little bit about Sankirtan and your experiences in Sankirtan.
the entertainment for the evening. But I mentioned, and that was, must have been one of the similar podcasts, spoke about some of the experiences. I just mentioned this other one about the slows. We don't have these here. It was sort of my frustration when I came to England. It's a very rare thing when someone gives you a 20-pound note. In a wealthy country like America, it wasn't like that. People were much freer, much friendlier. And when I first started trying to do Sankirtan, like over there, I almost got arrested. Because there, how we used to do it, we just go up to someone and say, sir, just shake their hands and stop. And I tried to do that in downtown London. I remember just trying to do that also in Birmingham. People were like, they're trying to shake my hand, who are you? So people were much more different, they're friendly. And it wasn't just a matter of, you know, that there are people who weren't quite in the know, but people would buy, you know, it was just a standard thing. People would buy 5-10 books. And that was a regular thing. It wasn't like it happens once a year. It was a daily event where people would buy 5 books at a time, 3 books at a time, someone to give $20, which is nothing. It's just a regular thing. It's a regular thing that people would give $100 a day. And either just because they liked us, but mostly because that's all we're doing. We're just selling books. That's all we do. In that sense, unless devotees become extremely experienced, Sankirtan here is much more little from many rather than a lot from few. Of course, there you also had the little from many, but there were many more who gave a lot, and that gave a lot more impetus to Sankirtan. But I remember my fingers freezing, being frozen. But the very clear experience I had on 1 year on Sankirtan in Montreal, and it's much colder than here. I mean, here it gets cold, but there it gets very, very cold. And it was sometime around in April, and it was getting spring. And I remember standing in the warm shower and then feeling that my body was actually now thawing out. Because more or less that's how you just freeze up in the fall, in the winter, and then you never, ever, there's not enough hot water in the boiler to thaw you out every day. It took the sun to do that, it takes the spring to sort. And, that was, but there was if you meant to give up your feeling in your fingers and so on, and resistance to cold, then better give it up for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. It's a sacrifice, it's an austerity. I'm sure that the yogis who are in the Himalayas and, you know, they go underwater in freezing water and stand in freezing water, Ganges neck deep. It isn't that, you know, they don't lose the feeling in their fingers or that nothing happens to them. No, so that's the pasya. I guess in other countries, if you did Sankirtan in Spain, that wouldn't be a problem. But then the problem is that people are walking around half naked all the time. And that may be a worse problem than losing. So when they're all bundled up, then it's safe. All you got to worry about is the cold. So everything's got its advantages and its drawbacks. But certainly if we have to offer this body, and the other one is carrying book bags, which doesn't do your spine any good, even if you're switching from shoulder to shoulder every 20 minutes, or carrying large amounts of change, particularly in the UK, that's a problem. Because, you know, 1 pound coin, 2 pound coin. Do they have a 5 pound coin?
No. They have
got
it, but it's not very widely distributed.
It's not distributed. That's a good thing, because you just end up carrying coins, and that's... But it's not just us. I mean, people in the, you know, there's news agents out there also standing in the cold, and construction workers who are up on the 20th story in the winter. So we're not the only people, but we're doing it for Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, so if we have to accept these inconveniences, it's part of the tapasya, and you get a lot of spiritual credit and recognition for that. And it's worth it. That's what our Krishna consciousness movement is for. On one side, we're chanting Hare Krishna, practicing Krishna consciousness to purify our hearts. And on the other, we're desperately trying to get a lot of mercy, because as time goes on, we realize that this sadhana business is really slow going. And we need to get a lot of credits. And that's the best way to get it. There's no argument. I don't think even, although many things may change in this God, I don't think anyone argues the issue, but the best way to get Srila Prabhupada, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's mercy is by distributing Prabhupada's books. And that really gives us a opportunity to get mercy that would take a long time just by chanting, reading, and so on. So we should do that. Tapasya, tapodivya. Once again, that's sort of part of the institution or full-time devotee, is that he's giving his whole life to doing tapasya. I'll go out and sell books for the rest of my life. Why not? People are, you know, up there on the scaffolds when they're in their 50s and 60s, doing so many things, and or washing windows. I don't know if you probably haven't read that, but that was an amazing thing to talk about karma. This window washer in Chicago, 54th story, and the rope snapped. And he fell on the pavement, 54 stories, and he broke some bones, and he's walking, and there's no damage. 54 stories. How many of the stories? About 10, 15 feet, say, with everything else. So it's like 700 feet up. Well, no, it was 1,000 feet. It was like something like 1,000 feet up. Fell 1,000 feet. That's called karma. It's not your karma to die. You don't die. They said it was a miracle, just a miracle. A few broken bones. He's walking. And the doctor says no permanent harm to any. Well, someone can just walk out the door, slip. That's the crime. All right, let's. 8:30, I have to walk out. I've got still a few devotees to see pack, and then okay. Where do we sit? Are we sitting in the right place?
That's where you are, Swami Maharaj. Similarities we're going to be here. That's where we're going to be
Where I'm all right where I am?
Yeah.
Where are you going to be performing? Over here. Well, then I'd rather be somewhere where I can see. I'll sit there beside Brian, and that way I can also see and watch, and let me know that you are going to be on the internet.